Earlier this month, the Ontario government imposed a 2-year contract on the province's public school teachers. The contract freezes wages and cuts sick days. Teachers' unions in Ontario have launched boycotts of extracurricular activities in response to the province's tactics. Joining me now to talk about teachers' labor struggles across North America is Paul Olson, president of the Manitoba Teachers Society. Welcome, Paul.
Hi there.
So the Ontario government, what it did was it passed a law that allowed it to impose this contract on public school teachers. But the education minister has said that she hopes to then end labor actions by teachers by taking away this law that she used to impose contracts. Can you talk about what the Ontario government is doing with this?
I think it would take a lifetime to explain what the Ontario government is trying to do, but we're referring to Bill 115, which did impose a contract. It did strip away a number of things that teachers had earned or negotiated over the years. The particular legalistic trick that you're talking about, where you impose it in order to get the result you want, and then you repeal it so that there's nothing left to challenge, I've read some legal journals on the matter, and basically that's, I think it's referred to as evasion of review. So as a layperson just sitting here, I would think that their chances of doing that are not particularly good unless the impacts also are canceled, and that's not very likely. So that's something they're likely going to have to answer for.
Have there been precedents of this, either in terms of the passing the bill and imposing the contract, or of just imposing contracts across Canada?
There certainly have been legislative responses to collective bargaining that government didn't like. In Manitoba, teacher unions, teacher associations bargain directly with school boards, and the province has more of an arm's length funding obligation. But in other jurisdictions, there is more of a direct bargaining approach, and certainly things have been imposed when they don't feel that it's gone well, or when they've been out negotiated, or when they just weren't thinking clearly.
One thing I wanted to ask you about was the extracurricular activities, because I have heard people critical of the teachers in Ontario for this and talks of imposing or putting extracurricular activities as a contractual obligation so that teachers then would be violating their contract if they pulled those activities. Is this something that you're concerned about?
It's not something I'm concerned about locally. In Manitoba, we have a number of collective agreements where it has been made very clear where boards and teachers have specifically agreed that extracurricular activities are mandatory, are voluntary. In the Ontario situation, it's kind of a childish approach to it on the part of the government, at least in my view. Frankly, the whole point of labor action is that it is supposed to draw attention to matters. It is supposed to demonstrate the value of the work being done. Teachers in Ontario in any number of contexts are not, as far as I know, obligated to provide extracurriculars. That is a gift that teachers give on their private time to their students. It is not an obligation, and when you are being treated that shabbily by an employer, to say that at that time in particular you owe additional favors and volunteer work related to your work is a bit bizarre.
Do you think there's popular support for that position, though, that some parents do feel that teachers do owe this to the students to provide extracurricular?
I think in some ways we might, as a profession, be, it's an odd phrase, but I'll make it up, a victim of our own generosity. Our role is to show up, teach very well, and go home. And anything beyond that is, in fact, a gift and an acknowledgement that we understand as professionals that there is a broader educational experience that we want our students to have. And so it's always an extremely difficult thing. This is not a decision that gets taken lightly. The teachers, and we can all remember this from our own school background, our coaches, our club mentors, things of that sort, are incredibly committed to providing these opportunities, the drama productions, the musicals, the teams. And so to withdraw those, when you can actually get a group of teachers to the point where they will say, you know, enough's enough, this is ugly enough, this is toxic enough, we are not being heard, we need to withdraw these services. When it gets that bad, then you know that they've been done wrong, because they didn't get into teaching in order to be involved in labor action. They got into teaching because they love what they're doing. Now, is there public support for that? I think that'll depend on the school and the region. It'll depend a lot on messaging. There is certainly misunderstanding in any kind of dispute. The idea that it might be, in fact, an obligation would certainly cause confusion for people. And, I mean, we all love our kids. Our child comes home. We know that they loved hockey or they loved high school volleyball or they loved the band, and that's not on anymore. My kid is hurting. My kid is sniffling on the couch, and I'm mad about it. I'm a dad. I'm a mom. I'm angry about that, and I want somebody to fix that. So I certainly do sympathize. I'm also a dad. I get it. But there is a time when you have to stand up for the kids that you haven't yet taught. You have to take a stand for those that are coming. And that is a professional obligation that we also take seriously, because part of our job is to think about the long term, not just this week or this year.
I wanted to ask you about here in Manitoba, because teachers here, unlike Ontario, do not have the right to strike. They haven't had that right since the 50s.
That's
Does
correct.
That limit teachers' abilities here to bargain with their employer?
What we have in Manitoba is a process of binding arbitration. So by and large, overwhelmingly, the teacher collective agreements in Manitoba are negotiated, which means that they are agreed to at the table by representatives of teachers and representatives of school trustees. When there is an impasse, when we cannot reach an agreement, it is submitted to an impartial third party, an arbitrator, and he or she will hear the cases. There will be many binders of information presented, and at the end of the day, he or she will write an award. And the thing about arbitrators is that they want to keep working. And so their approach fundamentally is that they want to write an award that will split the difference, and that will be as close as possible to what you would have agreed to at the table if you'd been able to agree to anything at the table. If they come out with something that is lopsided, frankly, they will never work again. And so they have a strong economic incentive to make sure that their findings, their awards, are in fact quite equitable. And so we have not lost a day of school in this province since 1956 to labor disagreements between teachers and school boards, and I'm very proud of that.
And so is the right to strike then not an issue for Manitoba Teachers Society trying to regain that?
It is an issue in the sense that, much as in Ontario, collective bargaining is a human right, it's a civil right, and the full range of options to address an impasse should be available. So we believe that we should have the right to strike, but that being said, it is something that we would extremely reluctantly pursue for the most part. We would have to be treated quite shabbily, as our colleagues in Ontario have been, before that would even be a matter for discussion.
I wanted to talk briefly what's happening outside of Canada, in the United States, and in particular in Chicago. And what we saw in last year was there were more than 300,000 public school teachers who did go on strike to protest changes to their contracts. Can you talk briefly about some of your concerns about what teachers were fighting against in Chicago?
I don't pretend to have any great expertise on Chicago, but it is a theme that has recurred again and again, particularly in the States, but elsewhere as well. And it's the whole notion that education is a commodity, that it is a service, much like getting fries at the drive-thru window, much like having someone wash your car, that it is a private good that can be sold, not a fundamental societal obligation to its children, to our collective future, to creating, in fact, a society with some sense of cohesion. What I do see in American culture, in American society, is a deliberate attempt to atomize everything and to go to the point of being so focused on the individual that you don't think there needs to be any kind of collective commons, any kind of public good. So one manifestation of that was in Chicago. They were looking at basically doing away with any number of public schools, commodifying that, making them charter schools. For your listeners who don't know, a charter school is a bit of a bizarre paradox all by itself. It is a publicly funded private school. So you manage to tap into the public purse, but you remove some of the public linkage, the public accountability, and the broader societal support for education that is vital. So there was a lot of that toxicity and looking at teachers would be fired, but they could apply to work again in a privatized school. One of the dangers behind that is with any workplace, and you see this in our town, in the food service industry, in the restaurants, in the complete absence of a unionized environment, where you've got people who are vulnerable employees who have no representation, who have to basically take whatever they can get. The chance of advocating for something better, either for yourself or, in the case of teachers, for your students, is somewhere between slim and none. Most of our conversations with government and with school boards, some of them are definitely about labor issues. A very large percentage of them are about teaching and learning issues. And in order to do that, you need a collective voice where teachers can channel through their elected representatives or speak directly and say, look, here is what my kids need. They're not getting it. What do we do about that? And so unions are viewed certainly in parts of America as part of the problem, and that is a bill of goods that has frankly been sold to them. But in Manitoba and elsewhere in Canada, we are very often part of the solution as well.
I thought it was really interesting in Chicago, from what I heard of it, that teachers were very successful at getting communities, and in particular low-income communities, and you know, often people who may make a lot less than teachers may not be in a union, but didn't see teachers as being privileged, saw them as providing a very important service that they wanted to protect.
Absolutely, and that is not, of course, unique to Chicago. You ask anybody, even and sometimes I have fun with this with my day job, even someone who is virulently anti-education or anti-union or so on. If you say, "Hey, tell me about your favorite teacher," everybody knows at least one teacher who went the extra mile again and again and again, either for them or their brother or their kid, and their eyes missed over, and they remember that kind of work. And that's the connection that at our best, that's the connection we make. Certainly in poorer neighborhoods in Chicago, and they've got their share, often that adult is one of the few people who is able to consistently go to bat for your kid and look out for them and help them get through school and make something of themselves and overcome some of the baggage that has been heaped upon them by whatever mechanisms, either a lack of public services or poverty issues or social injustices, all of that stuff. Often it is a teacher at the center of that, trying to make sure that everything from that kid has shoes to that kid has a place to sleep at night. And when you talk to people, not about regulation and about law, but you talk to them about their own children and about the impacts on their own children, the lights go on and they realize that what you're really talking about is not some legalistic issue. You're talking about fundamental human needs and how to best meet them.
Well, thank you very much, Paul, for coming in today and talking to us about this.
Hey, thank you for having me.
I've been speaking with Paul Olson. He is the president of the Manitoba Teacher Society, and there is more information on the union and on education issues on their website, and that is mbteach.org. And that does include the article, Anti-Union Movement Gains Steam, Teachers Squeezed Both Ways. And you can find that at mbteach.org. And you're listening to Mud & Water on CKUW 95.9 FM.